May it please the Court. Good morning, Niels Frenzen, for the petitioner Mohammed Hussein. This is also an appeal from a denial of asylum, withholding of removal, and protection under the Convention Against Torture involving a petitioner from the Sudan. In this case, where the Court is reviewing the Immigration Court's decision because the Board of Immigration Appeals adopted the findings of the Immigration Court decision, the immigration judge in this
matter... He was found credible here, correct?
The petitioner was found
by... Credible testimony.
The judge credited fully his testimony yesterday.
We're really talking about whether he has a reasonable fear of future persecution.
Yes.
Without a finding of past persecution.
We did not claim past persecution, and this is based upon whether or not the evidence in the record supports the finding that he has a reasonable fear of future persecution. The immigration judge decision that the Court is reviewing is basically, in our view, a boilerplate decision. It's a 9 or 10 page decision which summarizes accurately the law, but does not discuss the extensive factual record in this case, and we think that is why the immigration judge's decision ought to be reversed by this court. As Judge Paez was saying, the immigration judge found Petitioner Hussein to be credible, found that Petitioner Hussein was a member of an opposition party, an outlawed opposition party that he had joined while he was in his first year of high school in Khartoum. The immigration judge accepted that the petitioner's family has a long history of political involvement in the Sudan. Basically, we're dealing with 4 generations of political activists in this case. But the judge ignored that evidence and instead denied asylum based upon 3 factors. One was a short trip that Mr. Hussein took to the United Kingdom before he entered high school in Khartoum, and the judge focused on the fact that Petitioner Hussein returned to the Sudan and took that to mean that must mean that the petitioner had no fear of returning, no fear of persecution, excuse me. The immigration judge also focused on the fact that petitioner's mother, who had been living in Egypt after fleeing Sudan with the petitioner's father and younger sister, returned to the Sudan for a brief visit in 2002. The immigration judge basically concluded that since the mother was returned briefly to the Sudan, that must somehow indicate that the petitioner himself did not have a well-founded fear of persecution in the Sudan. And then thirdly, the judge focused on the fact that petitioner speculated that petitioner could find safe haven in Egypt, the country which the petitioner himself had never visited. The judge, one of the most important pieces of evidence in the record is the country report on human rights from the U.S. Department of State. The immigration judge cited this document by name when he briefly provided a laundry list of the various exhibits at the beginning of his decision, but he did not consider any of the facts that the U.S. Department of State had set forth in this country report. The State Department reports are required by regulation to be included in all asylum case records. They represent the views of the U.S. government. In this case, the 2002 country report characterized Sudan as a country with a human rights record that is extremely poor, numerous serious abuses on the part of the security forces, and perhaps most importantly to Mr. Hussein's case, the State Department reported that there are, quote, credible reports suggesting that the number of student victims of torture had increased during the year. This is the background evidence that goes to the issue of whether or not petitioner's Hussein's fear is reasonable or not. The immigration judge ignored that.
How do you distinguish our en banc decision that we recently issued with regard to the Indonesian Christian woman? She was basically making the same argument that you're making to us here, which was that because Christians were persecuted by Muslims in Indonesia, although she had not herself experienced direct persecution, she had a reasonable fear that if she returned to Indonesia, she would be persecuted. It seems to me pretty analogous to this case.
Well, I think it's analogous to the extent that Hussein's claim is based upon future fear of persecution based upon association with an outlawed political party. But Petitioner Hussein's claim is also based upon the fact that his brother and sister were political activists. His brother actually was tortured His brother and sister both received asylum from the Immigration and Naturalization Service in the years immediately, I believe it was a year or two before Petitioner arrived in the United States in 2003. Petitioner's father was forced into exile. Petitioner's grandfather died, not under the current military government, but under an earlier military government. The petitioner's grandfather died as a result of his political activities with the same political party. So the fears that Hussein have are much more tied into the activities.
But he also actually engaged in political activity.
And that's correct, Your Honor. He actually, the government correctly describes this as I believe incipient activities. These were just his beginning activities with the Democratic Union Party, the outlawed opposition party, as a young high school student, a first year high school student. But he actually did engage in political activities on behalf of the DUP, and the immigration judge credited that testimony.
Does it matter that the persecutors were different going back in the various generations? Because didn't the grandfather die under British rule?
I believe the grandfather was actually executed
by
the British colonial authorities. I don't think that carries much weight in regard to this case whatsoever. Directly, I think it certainly does show the length of this family's history, as I was saying, four generations of political activities with this particular opposition party. I think it is more relevant in terms of the reasonableness of petitioner's fear is what has happened to his brother, who was tortured, and what has happened to his father, and to a lesser extent, his grandfather and his great-grandfather.
Well, I guess that would go to sort of a more generalized argument that this has historically always been a very unstable, dangerous country.
That, as well as that this is a particular family, we cite and the government.
Who seems to anger whoever's in charge.
That's true. Even though the DUP was in power, I believe, in a coalition government for a short period of time in the 1980s, so the political activity of the family, as well as obviously thousands of other individuals, bore some success. Because I do want to reserve a minute or two, in regard to two of the facts that the immigration judge did focus on, the fact that the petitioner had gone to the United Kingdom in 2000 or 2001, the immigration judge seemed to place most of his basis for his decision is based upon the fact that Hussein returned after this 3-month trip to the United Kingdom. This trip occurred when the petitioner was a year or two younger. It also occurred before the petitioner himself began his political activities on behalf of the opposition party in high school. Not irrelevant, but we certainly think there is plenty to explain why. And indeed, the petitioner testified. The immigration judge specifically asked him about this. The petitioner specifically testified that he feels he is in greater danger today if he's forced to return to the Sudan because of the political activities that he engaged
what
in.
What do we do with the IJ's I think it was a finding, but his observation that there was a fear here of conscription now because of his age?
We have not pursued that appeal. We've before this court. We think the Supreme Court decision, Elias Zacharias, complicates those.
So you would have to concede that under Elias Zacharias that is a proper consideration for the IJ to remark upon.
Absolutely. On a claim based upon forced conscription, we think the fact that he was fearful of conscription goes to explaining why Petitioner Hussein left Sudan when he did. That was one of the reasons his mother returned to get him and his sister out of the Sudan, was because there was this fear of forcible conscription. But we don't think that gives us a basis for asylum at this time. So
I want to save your minute for a
yes,
for
thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Wendy Keats with the Department of Justice representing the respondent. Petitioner Hussein claims eligibility solely on the basis that he fears future persecution by the government of Sudan because of his own or his family's political opinions. This Court has made clear that the question of objectively reasonable fear depends on facts in the record that on which a reasonable fact finder would be compelled to find that that fear was reasonable. He hasn't met his burden. Based on his own opinion, he says he came to the United States in April 2002 when he was 14 years old. At the hearing, he testified, as Judge Tallman observed, that he left because he was afraid to be conscripted and because, in general, of his family's political prominence. Before he left Khartoum, he was a first-year high school student. He had done just this much in terms of political activity. He had attended 7 or 8 small, secret neighborhood meetings with 9 or 10 other students, and he had covertly distributed DUP flyers to friends at high school. That was the sum total of his political activity. There is no evidence in this record that the government of Sudan was in any way aware of this activity, was surveilling this activity, had any reason to know about this activity.
Does our case law require that the petitioner show that the government knew about that activity?
Well, it does require that there was awareness by the persecutor.
Which case do you cite for that statement?
I believe that is in Lo Long. I believe that the recent...
You actually think the government has to be aware of the individual person?
Has to be aware of it in order to persecute him on his own views.
The individual refugee has to demonstrate that the government he's fleeing knows about him.
If he is relying on persecution based on his own opinions,
you think?
He does have to demonstrate that. If he's relying on imputed political opinions, he does not. But
that stands for that proposition?
I believe Lo Long says that. And on also Sangha, which was cited in the reply brief, also says that. Imputed political opinion that the persecutors... Wait a minute, I'm sorry. I'm looking up here. Actual political opinion imputed to him. He has to have shown a publicly expressed political view which was or could easily have been known to his persecutors. That's for imputed. But I do believe that earlier in that decision, that's at Sangha, is at 103 F3rd, 1482.
Well, here he was politically, he circulated. I don't know I haven't read that case lately, but... He distributed flyers at the high school.
He distributed them to his friends.
And, well, that was it at the high school or not?
Yes, at the high school.
And it was found, his testimony was found credible.
That's right, but he was...
And the government could have found out about that.
Well,
it was public.
It wasn't public, that's the point. His testimony was that he distributed them to trusted friends. His activity was covert. He kept it covert on purpose. So his own testimony establishes that there was no knowledge at the time. And his argument really is that they could become aware of it. There's no evidence that they do investigate high school activity. The country report that council referred to had to do with university students who were overtly active, being persecuted by the government.
What chance of persecution does he have to show?
He has to show that a reasonable person in his circumstances would have a 1 in 10%.
1 in 10, right?
Chance. At least.
Have you thought about that? Your brief doesn't even mention the standard.
Well, there's no evidence that the government was aware that he was politically active, and no evidence that the government persecuted persons who were not active.
This is a very oppressive government. I think everybody knows that. He comes from a very prominent political family. He's engaged in subversive activity. And you think he doesn't have a 1 in 10 chance of something bad happening to him?
At the age of 14, he was engaged in very covert, very minimal political activity in a very short period of time, then he left the country. The record does not show that, and has no evidence that the government was aware of that activity. And he doesn't have anything else to show that he personally would come to their attention other than his family's prominence. Now, on the evidence of his family's prominence, there are family members who were persecuted and family members who were not persecuted, even though they hold the same political views, in fact, come from the same family that has been active in the same outlawed party. And the most important figure in that is his mother, who is from a DUP family and herself was involved in DUP activity at one time. She lived with his active father for 30 years. His father fled the country. His mother remained in the country for several years after his father left. She left only to be with him, not because of persecution of herself. He has an older brother who, when active at the university level, in fact, he was a party secretary who led demonstrations. That brother was persecuted. He has an older sister and was granted asylum here. He has an older sister, Ishraga, whose claim to asylum was based on her own overt political activity at the university level. Again, consistent with the State Department country report, those are the people that are persecuted.
So as long as he, you know, if he gets sent back to Sudan, minds his P's and Q's, doesn't get involved in any political activity, he's okay.
That's correct, Your Honor, on the basis of what the evidence
is. But if he goes back and continues on with his political activity,
that could be the basis of a new departure from Sudan and a new attempt
to gain asylum. Maybe he would be able to get out of Sudan if he did that.
That's possible, Your Honor, but we cannot speculate about the future, and that's not the basis for a grant of asylum.
So he only had to make a 1 in 10 showing that
that is speculation, isn't it? If I tell you, you've got a 1 in 10 chance of winning the case, that's speculation, isn't it?
But in here, we're based on the record at the time of the hearing.
Yeah, but you're looking at the total conditions of the country as a major factor in
that. It's a terrible place, and a lot of countries are terrible places, but I believe the case law is clear.
Well, this is
that
one of
the
worst.
That isn't the basis for asylum.
I don't know. It's hard for me to think of a worse place.
Well, again, Sudan has a reputation based on a civil war that has ended and on a persecution of non-Arab Muslims in the
West.
They've
done terrible things.
He doesn't fit within either of those categories. Uh-huh. So based on the evidence that he presented to support his claim for asylum, there is not enough here and certainly not enough for a reasonable fact finder to be compelled to find that he has shown that he even has a 1 in 10 chance of being persecuted on the basis of an imputed opinion from his family's political activity, because many members of his family who also equally have the same imputed political opinion have not been targeted. And that's the standard he has to, or somebody like him, another member of his family who has not been politically active, has to be targeted based on the imputed views of his family. And the evidence only shows that the government has targeted people who are overtly active in his family. And that's the sum of his case. If there are no further questions, thank you.
I'd just like to address one point, and that is the issue of whether or not the Sudanese government needs to be aware of the petitioner's activities. Prior to the 1987 Supreme Court decision, Cardozo-Fonseca, the Board of Immigration Appeals case law was that an asylum applicant had to show that the persecutor was already aware or could easily become aware of the political activities on a direct political opinion claim. Matter of Mogherini, 1987 BIA case that is cited in our reply brief, changed that in light of the Cardozo-Fonseca recognition that the BIA had been applying too high of a standard of proof of in asylum cases, and now the board says that in a direct political opinion case, the asylum applicant only has to show that the persecutor could become aware of the political activities, and we think the record shows that the Sudanese government could become aware of petitioner's activities.
Glad to hear you cite Cardozo-Fonseca.
I
great triumph of Ninth Circuit jurisprudence.
I remember the day it came out, Your Honor. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel.
Hussein versus Gonzalez will be submitted. Thank you, Counsel.